This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
Hello, I'm Mark Boulanger. As the world confronts the pandemic and starts to consider how economic activity is organized after it, labor is questioning the role huge corporations will play. An especially worrisome issue is how corporations will use data collected from individuals and other sources. In order to better understand this, Public Services International commissioned a study by IT for Change, based in India. The PSI is the global union which represents national public service unions at the world level. The report was prepared by Parminderjeet Singh. A webinar introducing the report was opened with comments by the PSI's Assistant General Secretary, Daniel Bertosa.
PSI is pleased to be launching this report today. We commissioned it because we think that big data and the role it plays in our political economy is not well understood by workers and unions. And we felt this for a couple of reasons. First, it's clear that workers and citizens are creating value by the production of this data, but they're receiving almost no compensation for it. And that's because the value as an individual data point is almost nil. It's negligible. Yet when we collect this data, or when large corporations collect the data, it's very, very valuable. And it's the corporations that get the profits from that data. And for PSI, and I think the global labour movement, we see this as another form of extraction of surplus value from labour. And that's really important because it's a significant contributor to rising inequality that everyone's experiencing. We were also worried that it was changing the relationship between labour and capital. And not just because it's undermined a long fought for workplace rights, for example, by facilitating precarious work, although that's very, very important. It's also because it's fundamentally shifting the relationship between the owners of capital and the owners of labour, workers. One of the main advantages that labour has had historically was that it understood the production process better than capital. You needed workers to make decisions in the production process. But with the ability to process so much data, and with the ability for artificial intelligence to make decisions, what we're finding is capital now knows more about the process than workers, and they can make decisions without worker involvement. And when you think about that, that's actually quite a massive shift in the power relationship in the production process. Even in the past, in the last industrial revolution, even though the machine did the work of many, many workers, you still required some workers to turn it on, to maintain it, to understand when it was overloading, to turn it off if there was a problem, to regulate it. And workers over time, because of their experience with those machines, became skilled. They understood the machine. They understood how it worked. They understood when it needed to be maintained. But with the introduction of AI and big data, all of this is changing. And so often the owner of the data knows more about the production process than the worker. And this has, as I said, massive implications for the relationship, but in particular for the ability of workers to withdraw their labour. And we need to understand that. PSI has a double interest, both as a trade union, but also as the trade union representing workers in the public services. PSI is also worried that government needs data to make decisions in the public interest to benefit us all, but increasingly this data is held by the private sector and by private sector capital. We think that governments need to guard more jealously this resource, otherwise we'll all suffer. So whether it's the ability to understand traffic flows, perhaps Google or Uber has, whether it's the ability to have the information needed to make decisions about water networks or electricity networks, or even to understand the way in which pandemics spread or the intellectual property around vaccines, or even the regulation of media during elections, government must have access to the information that's required to allow our democracies to function. Otherwise, our public services will be undermined and ultimately democracy itself will be undermined. Now, these are fundamental political questions, but they're also really practical ones. How do we understand these threats? Is Labor still able to organise? If so, how? What do they mean for the delivery of quality public services? And what do they mean for democracy? But for workers to take action, anger is not enough. They must have hope that things can change. And in many cases, we're finding that this hope is ebbing away and we're seeing disengagement from the political process. But Labor has faced these challenges of the introduction of new technology before, and we will again. And I think workers are inventive, and I think workers will find ways to resist. But we must be deliberate in considering this and deliberate in our responses to this. And so if I could just finish with a story from Kieran Goddard from the Alex Ferry Foundation, told me just a few days ago when he was talking to an Uber driver. And the Uber driver was saying that they had formed a WhatsApp group with about 100, 120 other drivers. With Uber, the price of the ride changes depending on the demand in certain areas. And what this WhatsApp group had done was they realized that if all the Uber drivers in a certain area that they knew was in high demand, if they all vacated that area and went to the edges of that area, it would show that there was a lot of demand there, but not many drivers, and the price for the rides in that area would go up. And then those workers could then, from the periphery of that area, come in and take those rides at a much higher price. But this tactic only works if everybody does it. It only works if there's trust amongst those workers, and all of those workers must identify that they have a common interest. And so those workers may not have seen it this way, but that was actually union activity. It was collective action. And so, if you like, it was a form of temporary strike. And what it shows to me is that workers intuitively understand what needs to be done. And it gives me hope. It gives me hope that we can exercise some power and control over this new form of technology. But to do this, we really need to start at the beginning and ask ourselves, why is all this happening? And Parminder, your paper describes that. It describes the change in the political economy that's happened across the globe because of the emergence of big data and AI. And I just wonder, Parminder, if you can start by telling us what you mean by this.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks for an excellent introduction. And you are right that if we have to fight successfully the new digital issues in favor of labor power, we need to understand what is happening. What is the theory behind it? What is the political economy of a digital society? And let me step back. A political economy of any social arrangement is basically arranged around its principal resources. When it was an agrarian feudal system, land was the principal resource. And we understand and we know that everything in a feudal society was around relationships of land. Who owned the land? Who was a serf? Who gets the produce? What happens? So everything, who was the king? Who was the subject? Everything was around land. And then we moved to the industrial society. Everything was around ownership of factories and machines. And that became capital. And our current thinking about the capital-labor struggle is largely situated in that industrial paradigm. What has happened actually is that the things have changed. We read a lot about data being the new oil or the new gold. Clearly, everybody seems to agree that data is the most valuable thing in a digital society. Now, that must be surprising that if something is the most valuable resource in a particular paradigm, why don't people talk more about what is the value of that resource, how it is denominated, who owns that resource, what are the allocatory principles around that resource? Because it's very basic. You couldn't have a feudal society without describing allocative principles around land, same with industrial society, but around data, while people agree that it's the central value, people don't talk about allocating the value of it. And there lies a tail because immediately the issue would arise, who should legitimately own that value? People think of data as something, well, you know, it is problematic, but not really what is problematic about it. So let's think of it not in terms of data, but in terms of intelligence. After all, what does data do? If somebody takes my data, what does that person do with that data? The person develops intelligence about me. So we should be thinking about the central resource as being intelligence and not so much data. Data contributes intelligence. And once you start looking at intelligence, somebody owning your intelligence, somebody knows about the production processes more than the worker who's next to that machine. What we have started to do is to outsource our intelligence systematically, outsource the intelligence of how we organize our lives. Google knows more about it. Outsource the intelligence about the driver not knowing where the customer is because Uber knows it. So this is a case of outsourced intelligence. And what happens with outsourced intelligence is that there are huge global corporations, which is the new form of economic organization in the digital society, which become the sole collectors of data from all places, and they use the data to convert into intelligence about everything. And this centralized intelligence then controls all actors in a sector systematically, whether it's Uber and drivers, Amazon and manufacturers and traders and logistics, or now in health, education, and services. And I'll quickly give an example of what does it mean. Daimler's CEO, Daimler is the maker of Mercedes, said a few years back that what Google and Apple is going to do is to be the brains of the cars, and we would just be making the shells. So we should start looking at these digital corporations as being the brains of large ecosystems which control the sectors. So these are the kind of things which are happening.